everybody, Raina here. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Book Banter. Tonight, I will be talking with Rob Brenzetti. He's a veteran TV animation, veteran of TV animation, whose work on the Cartoon Network's Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, which I personally loved and have seen every single episode because my son was the correct age when Foster's was on TV. He also worked on the Nickelodeon show My Life as a Teenage Robot. He created it. He acted as a supervising producer for Disney's Gravity Falls and served as executive producer on the first two seasons of Disney's Big City Greens, among many other projects. He has multiple books, including the one we're going to talk about this evening, The Cursed Cloak of the Wretched Wraith. This is the third book in a series, a horrible bag series. And if you have been here with us from the beginning, you might remember that Rob was on Book Banter for the first book in this series. And so I'm excited to have him back and talk to him about this series and what he's working on and how we got here. So without further ado, I'm going to welcome Rob to Book Banter. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. So this is exciting because I don't remember if, was it a three book arc from the beginning?
Yes. You mean when I first conceived it, or was it always going to be three books, or?
Was it always going to be three books? Yeah.
Not always. When I was working on the first book, I was just thinking of it as one book. But before it ever got sold to Penguin, my literary agent asked me, did I think it was one book or did I think maybe it was more? And I said, it could be more. And he said, well, if you think it could be more, I think it could be a trilogy. So he said, well, before we go out with this manuscript, which I had done a full manuscript of book one, he said, write me a page for book two and a paragraph for book three. So I plotted out the whole series, and that paragraph for book three is nothing like this book at all. Besides the fact that the story ends, that's about the only thing that stayed from that paragraph till the actual published book.
Well, a paragraph isn't actually very much.
No.
Like looking that far in advance.
No, it was not much to go on. So it's not, the fact that I strayed is not a huge surprise.
Everyone was okay. They're like, this is not the paragraph that we approved.
Yeah. Well, I think it basically in that third book, I hinted that things would happen. There would be more action on Earth than there ended up being, at least different action on Earth. There's actually quite a bit of action that takes place on the Earth here, but in a non-spoil, I won't say anything that would spoil it for a future reader, but we do go back and forth between Grabog and Earth, more so in the third book than in either of the prior two. But the action on Earth in that paragraph has nothing to do with the action on Earth in the actual book.
That's kind of funny, but understandable for sure.
Yes.
There is a lot of Earth action on, it was Terra Firma, right?
Terra Firmament. Yes. That's what Grabogians call Earth, is Terra Firmament.
Yeah. There is quite a lot of action on Earth. And I think going into this book, I didn't really see that coming.
Neither did I going into the book.
do tell me more.
Well, I mean, again, like I was kind of flying by the seat of my pants in this book, in that I thought there were certain things that I discovered in the writing the first two books that I was like, I knew that I had to reveal and answer certain questions in this third book. And I wasn't quite sure how I was going to do it. And I had one plan for a very long time that kind of just sat on the shelf. But then when it came time to actually write this book, I was dissatisfied with that. But by the time I was getting around to writing this book, I had a new idea about how to answer the questions that needed to be answered. And specifically, they're about the nature of the Wraith, which is the big villain throughout the three books. Starts off name as the worm, becomes the Wraith, but it's really the same creature. Revealing more about that character, I needed to figure out a way how I could reveal that. And I didn't. I had a different plan at first. And then when I came up with the new plan, I had to kind of figure out how that was going to work. So there was a lot of kind of thinking to be done before I could start writing. But luckily I had that time to think and try and figure it out, but I was kind of flying by the seat of my pants a little bit. I consider myself a plotter, but I was very much, putting on my pants or pants, for the third book in major moments where I was just like, I know how to start. I know where I kind of need to get to. in the middle. I hope I'll figure out how to get there. So I kind of was kind of going along, knowing I wanted to do certain things, but not quite sure how I was going to do them. If that's probably the vaguest answer in the world, but that's kind of, I'll do that trying to not spoil any of the details.
Yeah. That's tough sometimes. Did you find that pantsing moments, like, was that refreshing or was that stressful since you're a plotter?
It was stressful and fun. As long as I felt like I had a little bit of a clue, if I was in a dark room and I could see a little bit of a light ahead, I felt like that was enough to keep me confident and excited. If that light ever went out, then I would start panicking. But it did, I only had a couple of very panicky moments where I thought there's calculations involved in how I plotted stuff out. A couple times where I thought like I might have gotten the calculations wrong and therefore everything could have like fallen apart, but I was wrong about being wrong. I was okay. I was right. I was right after all. So it was all right. But there were a couple of moments where all of a sudden I stopped and get a brain freeze and start sweating, you know, and be like, oh my God, is everything about to fall? And then like going back, checking things, doing math longhand, doing it with a calculator, going like, okay, I'm okay. I'm all right. It all works out.
I think my favorite character is Schrodinger's cat.
Thank you.
That is brilliant. And I think your books, these three books, do something that I know Foster's did, and I know Gravity Falls does a bit. I haven't seen all of the shows that you worked on because my son aged out. But there are jokes for the kids and jokes for the adults.
Mm-hmm.
And Schrodinger's cat is like one of those ones that some kids might know, but adults are going to know. And I was from the minute I saw it, I was just sort of like chuckling internally to myself, like, where is this going? This is going somewhere from the beginning. And you don't know exactly where and how it's going to work in. But I loved that it wasn't just like a one page character, like, it was there for the whole book, and I love that so much, sir.
Yeah, well, I mean, without trying to spoil too much, like, there was a need for quantum physics in this book. And I'd set up this physics that Zenith in book one, like, brings his sister's intro to physics book with him into Grabog. And that becomes a factor because the scribe is very interested in Fermin science. It's like magic to them. So when he finds out that Zenith has a science book, that's a bargaining chip for Zenith and also an object of desire now for the scribe who runs Grabog and kind of is the kind of like the governor in a way. He's not the king. That's the worm, but he's kind of like the guy that kind of runs things and keeps things ticking in a way. So the idea that he could use science to enhance Grabog finally comes into the fore in this third book. Because he gets his hands on that physics book. So there are going to be physics ideas and quantum physics characters like Schrodinger's cat that I figured I wanted them to come to life and be not just like concepts, abstract concepts, but like concepts brought to life and become characters. So there's Grandfather Paradox is another quantum physics theory, and he is a character in the book. Schrodinger's cat is probably the most important of those characters. And basically, if the kids don't know the theory out there, basically it's like there's a cat in a box. You can't see the cat. The cat could be either alive or dead based on certain conditions, but you don't know because you can't see. And it's kind of a way to explain how quantum physics works. So in the book, when Zenith opens the box, this new trusted advisor who knows what's going on in Grabog is either going to be helpful or she's going to be dead. So oftentimes when he needs her the most, she is dead. I kind of had a fun, I thought it was macabre and fun and tied into the quantum physics thing at the same time. She's one of my favorite characters as well. Of course, Creeble is my overall favorite character in the three books, but Schrodinger's cat is probably my favorite character of the third book specifically. I love her a lot and I was very pleased. I'm glad to hear you say that you liked her as well.
Absolutely. So Nova is asking, what inspired you to make this book or this series?
What inspired me to make the book or the series? Well, I mean, I've always wanted to, I mean, I'm not always. I've had a very long career in animation. I've enjoyed it, loved doing it. The secret about animation is when you're an artist, you're often also a writer. I was a storyboard artist for a very long time. And as a storyboard artist, you write a lot of the story, you write, come up with jokes and plots and characters. So I've always been kind of writing, but just kind of behind the scenes. One of the things you don't get very often to do in children's animation is scare kids. Gravity Falls was kind of the exception. We got to do some scary episodes and we often did scary concepts and scary, villains on Gravity Falls, but generally speaking, most of the shows I've worked on lean towards just pure comedy. So I wanted to scare kids. I've been making kids laugh, hopefully, for a very long time, and I finally decided I wanted to scare kids on a more consistent basis. So I decided to make these spooky kind of horror fantasy books for middle graders and for everybody, but you know, geared towards the middle graders. And that was the original inspiration, was to make spooky books and make this trilogy of kind of spooky, scary ideas. There's a lot of comedy in all three of these books. There are a couple of rather scary moments. I think most readers will be okay with them. Not super, super scary or super, super bloody or gross. There's a little bit of every one of those little things that are a little bit gross sometimes, a little bit scary sometimes, mostly fun, funny, and mostly adventurous. Mostly the main simple motivation was to scare kids, if I could be so bold.
I know. I like that. When you came up with the idea of putting the other world in this bag, like, why? I mean, it's so silly, but like, there's you see portals to other worlds in movies and books, the TV shows a lot, but they're usually a portal that is a door, a window, a wardrobe, a something you imagine going in or out of, even if you're just playing, like in a wardrobe. This bag, I imagine, is like sort of Santa's sack. Like, I imagine it as sort of a larger bag, but I don't actually know that it is. Really, it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be, now that I'm saying this out loud. Mm-hmm. Since it's a portal to another dimension, if you will, it doesn't actually have to be that big, but like, why were you inspired to make like that?
We might have talked about this with the first book, but the Horrible Bag of Terrible Things, that title came from my wife and it had nothing to do with the story that was created, but it did inspire the story. It was basically just a grocery bag full of like old tax receipts and phone bills and stuff that we didn't want to deal with. So it got shoved in the corner and was called the Horrible Bag of Terrible Things. And I just took that title and created the fantasy world. And I was also, when I was a kid, there was a 1960s version of Felix the Cat where he had a magic bag of tricks. Do I have the, yes, here it is. I have the magnet. Excuse my bad. There's Felix with his bag of tricks. You can see the bag is very much like the horrible bag. So those two things combine, and he could pull anything out of this bag, or this bag could transform into anything. This bag could become a car or whatever, but if he needed something, he could pull it out of this bag. So I kind of reversed that concept. And I thought it was fun and absurd that a world could be hidden in the bag. Alice in Wonderland was another inspiration for Grabog, kind of the absurdity of the characters and the absurdity of the land. And, you know, and she kind of gets to that land through weirder, stranger things. Though I guess a mirror feels more traditional now because we've lived with Alice in Wonderland for so long. But so I just wanted to do something more unusual. I wanted my portal to be a little bit different. And the bag kind of just presented itself from a couple different avenues. And also, I love the idea that, like, you can have a portal that, like, gets away from you. It's not set in, you know, like, if you go to this wardrobe or you go to this mirror in the living room, well, the mirror will always be there unless someone moves it. But it seems more permanent in place, or bigger things. But a bag's very easy to move, and the bag gets moved on Zenith at the end of the second book. The bag has been moved on him, and it leads to problems for him that he has to solve at the start of this book. So I like the idea that we had a portable portal.
I like that. Yeah. I wonder like how much fun it is to make up these characters, because the world, you do an amazing job like building the world, but then the characters that populate it are really what makes it.
Thank you.
That sounds like actually a lot of fun to me.
It is. I mean, it's a challenge and it's also fun. The balancing act, I guess, is to the characters that you establish in book one keeping them alive, and but adding new characters as you go along in the series to freshen things up and make things fun. So, like Kreeble the Gargoyle, I remember when the second book came out, Kirkus Review gave it a good review, but they said, "Well, there's not. I kind of miss Kreeble in this book," and I was like, "You." I don't want to swear at an abstract reviewer here, but I was like, I was kind of like, what? I'm like, Kreeble's in the book. What's wrong with you? And I'm like, okay, maybe I didn't put her in enough. So when I approached this third book, I was like, I was in the middle of writing this book when that review for the second book came out. And I like doubled back and actually did something that I wasn't intending to do that brought Kreeble made her much more present throughout the whole book in the way that she would have otherwise been absent in the middle. And if you've read the book, I think you know the section I'm talking about. But again, I don't want to spoil things for people, hopefully, that are going to pick up the book and read it. But Kreeble is very much, out of spite at that negative part of the review, I kind of went back. It was actually great. It was like creative inspiration to make this book better. Because when I did that, I thought like, oh, this section of the book is so much better now with Kreeble along for the ride. It's a lot of fun to create these characters. I enjoyed them, like coming up with Schrodinger's Cat and Grandfather Paradox. Science was my worst subject in school, and I took as few science classes as I could get away with, both in high school and college. So then I somehow decided that this major complicated kind of science that I knew nothing about was going to be a major factor in this third book. So I had to actually study quantum physics for a little bit, not in a very intense way, but like get a couple of books, look at a bunch of websites, cross-check that people were talking about these theories in the same way. Is this what quarks are? Is this what Schrodinger's cat? Does everybody talk about that theory consistently? How does string theory work? Like all these concepts that come into play in the third book, I had to make sure at least I was close to legitimate with them. You know what I mean? Like I was using them in at least a mostly legitimate way, taking a little bit of artistic license, but at least basing most of it in the actual theories that exist. So I kind of had to take a crash course in quantum physics, which the teenage version of myself would have been horrified at the idea.
Well, and I think that attention to detail like that, while still like allowing yourself to bend it a little bit for your needs, is what makes it appealing to adults and to kids, because like it. If I was a scientist, I'd be like, wait a minute.
I'm sure.
But I've got intro to string theory, you know, and that's all I need. But then it shows that you know some of the science behind it. It's not, you didn't just throw it in because you heard it on a YouTube video one time and you threw it in. You did the work to make sure that it fits and it works in your novel. And so it's that layer, you layer humor, but you've also layered like the actual science behind it. And I think there's probably kids out there that will read this book and they won't know, but you're going to drop these little seeds. And then when they do continue on in high school and they're learning these things in an actual science, like that's going to be there. And that's kind of crazy. You will have planted the seeds of the science, you know, for these like upper elementary school and middle schoolers. And then they're going to go off and they're going to actually learn it one day. And then they're going to be like, wait a minute. Like, why does this sound vaguely familiar?
Well, I hope so. I don't want to discourage any kids that don't like science to not read the third book. I don't like science either. I mean, I like it more now than I did when I was perhaps a middle grader myself. But the science is very light. It's basically a few paragraphs and you're out of the heavy science theory. it goes by very quickly. It's mostly done for comedy. It's mostly done to set up all the fun stuff that works in the world. Both the first two books, I would call them horror fantasy. This one does have a sci-fi element to it. The quantum physics is a part of it, but hopefully all the stuff is fun and not too heavy for anybody of any age. You know, you get, again, I wouldn't, it's not meant to be a science manual and it's nowhere near that, but these kind of things are, I had to do all the work and then distill it down and make it fun for the reader. So I hope I've kept the homework off the page and just left the fun part in the book with the characters and the stuff that happens. It's mostly just a way to set up the strange things that happen, the paradoxical stuff that goes on in Grabog and on Earth in this third book.
That is absolutely true. You nailed it. We're talking about the science, but it is not overly science. It is just part of what you use to tell this tale and keep us like moving in this adventure. And I don't know. I felt like I was very happy with the ending as well, which we won't talk about at all. But I just want you to know, and everyone out there, you get a good ending. He does not leave you hanging. Get good ending.
Thank you. Yes, I'm very happy with the ending as well. And again, it's not necessarily anything. It's not a place I thought I would end up when I started writing the trilogy, but it's a place that I'm glad I arrived at. I feel like it's the right ending for the characters. And, at the heart of it, this is a story about Zenith and his sister Apogee and their relationship. All this crazy events and whatever, really their relationship and how they relate to each other and how they negotiate their relationship and how it shifts through the three books. That is what the heart of the books are supposed to be about. It's about how do we love the people we love? You know what I mean? How do we love our brothers, we love our sisters when we're little kids. Maybe we argue a lot at some point, maybe we come back together, but like, no matter who's in your life, your loved ones, you're constantly negotiating as you grow and change, you're negotiating that relationship and it's shifting and whatever. And, you know, you want to stay connected, but maybe the old way you were connected doesn't work anymore. So I felt like that was something everybody could relate to, even if it's not your sibling, if it's your parents or your favorite uncle or whatever, you know, someone, people in your life, your friends, your closest friends, you know, as you change and grow and things change in each other's life, sometimes it's hard to keep that connection, but sometimes the idea is just like you need to reconnect in a different way. So that was kind of the emotional core of the books. And so I think that's what the ending is all about, is how they decide to alter and change their relationship in a way that's going to work for the two of them going forward. So I'm glad that I felt like it ended in a good emotional place for those two characters. Sounds like you agree, and I'm happy to hear that.
I do, definitely do. And yeah, it is at its heart, like a family story, or at least a sibling story, through all the ups and downs of the wild rides and the crazy things that they are exposed to, but also like able to do, like these adventures they're able to go on. And I kind of like, as an adult, in a lot of ways, wish that I could read this as a kid, so that kids get a lot of get an advantage, because they get to really fall into the bag with Zenith and Apogee in a way that I think as an adult you sometimes hold yourself back from.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually wish I could read this like as a 10 or 11 year old.
Well, thank you very much. That's a wonderful compliment. I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, I remember those kind of being at that age and discovering a new book that I really loved and feeling very immersed in that world. And the thrill when you get far enough into a book that you know you're going to like it and that it's going to show you things you never thought of before. There's very little, if you're, you know, you reader at that age, there's very little else that's as exciting. I watched plenty of cartoons when I was a kid. I watched plenty of TV shows and movies, but books did something different, you know? And that's one of the reasons I wanted to write books for kids, is because I feel like there's a very special thing that books do that those other forms of media don't do in the same way. And that's to expand your mind in a way that like make you reach for something. And in that reaching and the kind of the engagement that you have to bring to a book, it immerses you in a way that those other forms of media don't do in quite the same way.
Yeah, for sure. Linda has a good, she's got a excellent comment for our last like question comment.
All right.
She says it's a very entertaining series and would love more stories like this in the future. Thanks, Linda, for the setup. What are you working on for the future?
Well, I mean, nothing Grabagian right now. I do have another project. It's actually the first nonfiction book I'm co-authoring with a friend of mine. Fans of my prior animation work will be excited when it's announced. I can't announce it yet. But I am currently working on that, kind of wrapping that up and then thinking about future fiction to come after that. I would love to return to the world of Grabog, but for now, this it's just going to be these three adventures for now. I would love to possibly create some other fantasy worlds that might be connected to Grabog and to Terra Firmament. There's a reference to the 11 realms in this book, and that is on purpose. I'm hoping there might be other worlds. There's a couple other that are mentioned. They don't seem to be habitable, but that might be untrue. But there are more beyond that. I was hoping we'll see what the future brings. I hope these books are successful enough that more will be written. I certainly love Zenith and Apogee and possibly wouldn't mind sending him on other adventures. This does wrap up the Grabogian trilogy for now, but there are things at the end that allow the bag to be reopened if the fates allow at some future point. So we'll see. But for now, yeah, for this year, while this has been getting ready to come out, I've been working on a nonfiction book. And thinking about my next fiction adventure. And I've got one lead on another possible series that I think I just cracked, which I was struggling with, but I think I just cracked how to make it work. So I'm going to start writing up some notes for that and get a proposal out there as soon as this book I'm currently working on kind of wraps up. But I got a couple different ideas for different they might be horror. They might be fantasy. They're going to be speculative in some way or fantastic in some way. Slice of life books, maybe someday, but not right now.
This, I did catch the mention of other worlds and thought the exact same thing. I thought, oh, set up.
We'll see.
Yeah.
It's in there.
Right.
It's legitimate if it goes that way.
Right. In case it comes, you don't have to backtrack and be like, oh yeah, remember, there could be other worlds. No, there are other worlds. So, excellent work.
Thank you.
And at the end here, Scott has jumped on and has said, it's hot in Topeka. That is for you.
Okay. Thank you, Scott.
on that note, I have put in the comments the link to grab a copy of The Cursed Cloak of the Wretched Wraith. And that link will also take you to a page. You can find Rob's other books there as well. It's been great talking to you again, Rob.
Thank you. All three. I've got all three here. Yeah. And I should say all three are in paperback. So, you know, that's a better price point for some people. But some people may have been waiting for all three to be out, but you could grab all three in paperback now. And they're also all available as audiobooks, too. And I love the audiobook version. My narrator, Jay Myers, did a fantastic job with the characters. And so if you're a fan of audiobooks, as I am, it's worth reading them by listening to them as well.
Yes. I would say that the audio, like I re-listened to 1 and 2 before I read 3 for this. And they're so great. Those are ones I feel like you could even, like, if you're road trip with the family, like, you could put those on and everybody could enjoy them and that would get you to where you're going.
Wonderful. Great recommendation. Great idea. Thanks, Raina.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of the book versions. I was so pleased to get Jay. He really took the job seriously, and we like asked me questions about the characters and really got into what who each character was and really did a great performance with all of them. He's very versatile and very funny, gets the jokes, gets the drama of the book. So I really do love the audiobook version. So I encourage people to try those out.
You should do that. So thank you for joining me, and everybody, thank you for watching and for commenting. It truly means a lot.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Raina.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Book Banter with Raina. I have been your host, Raina Nielsen. Theme music and production assistance was provided by Hoodoo Phonics Productions.